Resorts World Catskills, where luxury and excitement are so close by. Catch all the sports action and so much more at Resorts World Catskills. Dial *RWCAT to learn more.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.
It is not Dave Rothenberg. Pat O'Keefe filling in for Dave this morning. And we'll take you right up until 12 o'clock. Happy to be sitting in for Dave. I always am. I got my start here at 98.7 ESPN New York. More specifically with the Knicks and Rangers pregame, halftime, postgame show broadcasts as Dave's backup. So it's kind of good to be back where I started here. And it's a great day to be filling in for Dave. It is really one of those terrific times of the sports calendar for a number of reasons. Obviously, yes, I know the baseball season has officially opened already in Tokyo for those of you who might have missed it. But for all intents and purposes, especially here in New York, we're now 5 days away from opening day for the Yankees and Mets. So that's on the horizon, a big week as those teams trim up their rosters, try to get set for the season to begin. High expectations for both teams to begin the season, or at least expectations for both teams. And I'm talking more about the Mets, so it's always more fun when that's the case. So we've got that right around the corner. We just got through the NFL free agency frenzy for the most part. Now all focus is on the NFL draft at the end of April. Both New York teams, sadly, picking in the top six. And for those of you, and there are many of you, and I should say there are many of us who have been wondering what Dave Gettleman has been doing, well, that will be his opportunity to show us all what the plan is for the New York Giants. As the Giants have the 6th pick in the draft, the 17th pick in the draft, and a host of other draft picks that they have accumulated through a series of trades during the last couple of weeks. And then, of course, the main reason why this is such a good time of year on the sports calendar, one of the best, the NCAA tournament. It's that rare sporting event, right, that brings the non-sports fan or the casual sports fan kind of into the mix, and everybody for a huge and fun and energetic and exciting 48-hour period, everybody is at least somewhat aware of the NCAA tournament for a number of reasons. First and foremost, the brackets. Everyone fills out a bracket, whether you've watched college basketball throughout the season or whether you haven't watched a game all season long until the first game on Thursday afternoon of the tournament. Everybody's got a bracket because everybody has some sort of an affiliation with a college, whether you went to a school in the field, you know somebody who went to a college in the field, you grew up in the same town as one of these colleges. Everybody has some sort of an affiliation with the college. So when they're looking at the bracket and they're looking at these 68 teams, yeah, they don't know about the teams themselves, but for the most part, they know, you know, what Duke is, and they know what Villanova is, and they know Houston, and they know what Purdue is. So everybody has some sort of a connection with the field. I mean, a perfect example, I know a lot more people in my life that could tell me a lot more about Colgate University than they could tell me about the Minnesota Timberwolves. So that's what the NCAA tournament brings in the non-casual fan. Plus, it's, you know, the whole aspect. You've got basketball games going on in the middle of the day. Hey, let's duck out of work a little early on Thursday and go down to the corner bar and watch some of these games on TV. I mean, that's fun. That's kind of like the World Cup atmosphere. Here in Manhattan, especially, you know, that's in the summertime and, the weather's nice and you walk down the streets of Manhattan during a daytime in the summer and all these bars and restaurants are packed, people watching a sporting event in the middle of the day. So the NCAA tournament, at least for the first 2 days, which we have now gotten through, has some sort of an appeal for that. Starting now, it kind of starts to die off a little bit. It starts to teeter off a little bit. Not as much possibility for the upset for the Cinderella team. Most of the Cinderella teams, if they haven't lost already, probably aren't going to make it through this first weekend. But for these first 4 full days of the NCAA tournament, year after year after year, no matter the quality of college basketball, and that's what makes this great, because we all know that the quality of college basketball now is not what it was 10 years ago, is not what it was 20 years ago. It continues to decline. The big reason why, the one and done, if a player's good enough to go to the NBA, he's not sticking around for a 4-year standout college career like we had with Christian Laettner, like we had with Tim Duncan, like we had with guys like that from a different generation. So the quality itself is not as good, but there's still that same level of excitement for the Thursday and the Friday, and I think it's great that that hasn't gone away. But here's the thing about the NCAA tournament. What makes it a special NCAA tournament is if you can get that excitement, you can get that enthusiasm from the first weekend, all of that excitement that we just experienced the last 48 hours. If you can carry it through this weekend, today and tomorrow, and get it to next Thursday, the Sweet 16, and if you can still have a storyline or two that everybody is talking about regarding the NCAA tournament, and if by the time you get to the Sweet 16 games next Thursday, the NCAA tournament is still the biggest story in sports, then you've had a really special NCAA tournament. And there are two reasons why that could be the case this year. And I'm not talking about Tom Izzo. The first reason why is obvious, and that's Zion Williamson. If you can ever get that transcendent player, especially if he plays for a marquee team, or in this case, the marquee team, if you could put that combination together, that is a really special thing. And again, for the reasons I just mentioned, the early defections to the NBA, the one and done, you rarely get that transcendent player in the NCAA tournament anymore. Because if a player is that good to be that transcendent, he's not sticking around for a second year. So you pretty much have to get to that level your only year in college. And most players aren't equipped to do that. I think back to Anthony Davis, one of the best freshman basketball players ever in the NCAA. 2012, he led Kentucky to the national championship, John Calipari's only national championship. Anthony Davis wasn't that exciting of a player. As great as he was, and as great as that team was, and they won the national championship, Anthony Davis was not the transcendent star that everybody had to go and watch. So we rarely get this. We've got that now with Zion. I think the last time we had this, I don't know if it's the last time, but it's the most clear example that comes to my mind is 2003 and Carmelo Anthony. And interestingly, also a freshman. And a freshman at a time where it wasn't a foregone conclusion that he was going to be one and done. He ultimately was, and rightfully so. But Carmelo Anthony was such a transcendent star. And again, playing for a marquee program in Syracuse, one that at that time had never won a national championship. Carmelo Anthony was that transcendent star that was able to carry the NCAA tournament through the entire 3 weeks as the top story in sports. And we'll see how far Duke goes. But Zion Williamson certainly has that star quality. He certainly has those capabilities to do the same thing for this year's NCAA tournament. The other one that I'm really excited about and that I'm really interested in, and we're going to find out if this is going to continue later on tonight, is if you can get the star from the mid-major college basketball team that makes it to the second weekend, that pretty much single-handedly drags a mid-major program into the Sweet 16 or even into the Elite Eight. And if that player plays at such a high level by his sheer force of will and determination, he can take a team into the second weekend, then that's a really special thing. And I was looking back over the last 20 years, and I'm talking about Ja Morant, obviously. And I know a lot has happened since Thursday afternoon when he absolutely torched Marquette. First triple-double in the NCAA tournament since 2012. But it was an incredible performance for those of you who didn't see it. And I was excited. I'll be honest with you. Ja Morant plays for Murray State. And he's a guy all season long you've heard of as a top five NBA draft pick. But Murray State, you've got to work to find one of their games. I had not seen a lot of Ja Morant play. Bits and pieces throughout the season. Obviously a bunch of highlights, but never actually sat down and watched him play a basketball game. And to be honest, I'm glad that Thursday afternoon against Marquette was the first time I did that, because I got to see him against a team from a power conference, a team like Marquette out of the Big East with a guard like Marcus Howard and a legitimate top 25 program. That's not the kind of competition he was playing against during the regular season with Murray State. So to get to see him play on this level against a team like that and perform the way he did, 17 points, 16 assists, 11 rebounds. I mean, it was like love at first sight. It was unbelievable as Murray State blitzed Marquette. And I started to think of different examples in the last 20 years of a star player from a mid-major team that carried a program. And I'm not talking about a Gonzaga, one that's in the NCAA tournament every year, oftentimes playing in the Sweet 16 or beyond. I'm talking about a team that's not used to playing in the NCAA tournament, making a deep run to the Sweet 16 or even in the Elite Eight. And it almost happens once every 10 years, which is really funny. The last time I can remember this happening was the 2008 NCAA tournament. There was a slender guard with a sweet shooting stroke from Davidson, a 10th seed named Stephen Curry. And Curry that year took Davidson not only to the Sweet 16, he took them to the Elite Eight and went toe-to-toe with Kansas, losing the Elite Eight by 2 points, coming that close to bringing a 10th seed Davidson to the Final Four. Curry was the story of that NCAA tournament. And for those 2 weeks, Stephen Curry and Davidson were the story in sports. And that was one of the more memorable NCAA tournament runs that I can remember. That was 11 years ago in 2008. The time before that that I remember, you've got to go back to 1999. And this is a name that is very familiar to basketball fans here in New York because he's from New York. He's from Long Island. And he's a studio analyst for the Knicks broadcast on MSG Network. You see him on CBS Sports Network during March Madness and the college basketball season throughout the year. And that's Wally Szczerbiak. And those of you who are old enough like I am, because I was in college at the time and this was a great tournament, to remember the 1999 NCAA tournament. And Wally Szczerbiak taking a Miami of Ohio team, also a 10th seed, an at-large team into the field, and bringing them to the Sweet 16 with wins over Washington and wins over Utah. And then he had a terrific game in that Sweet 16 against Kentucky before bowing out in the third round. And Wally Szczerbiak that year of 1999 was the story of the NCAA tournament, until he was eliminated in the Sweet 16 with his Miami of Ohio team. Ja Morant's got that chance. This evening, 7 o'clock, it's Murray State against Florida State, a 12 against a 4. If Ja Morant can put on the same kind of performance that he did on Thursday and lead Murray State to a victory over Florida State, because let's be honest, he's going to have to put on that same kind of performance to lead Murray State to a victory over Florida State, a team that almost went to the Final Four last year, and a team that many have picked to go to the Final Four this year. He's going to need to do that today. Similar type of performance. But if Ja Morant can come up with that same kind of performance this evening, and now we're looking ahead to Murray State in the Sweet 16, led by this dynamic sophomore point guard who's going to be in the NBA, picked at the top of the draft next year, then we're really going to have something. And it's not just going to be Zion holding all the headlines between now and next Thursday. Ja Morant will make this his tournament. He'll grab it with both hands, and he'll hold on for dear life until this great run is over. So that's what you're rooting for. Unless your team is in it, obviously, you know, if you're a Villanova fan or a Villanova alum or Maryland or Gonzaga or any of these other teams that are still alive, you're rooting for your team. But if you're a college basketball fan, if you don't have any affiliation with any of the teams left, if you're like Ty Butler, who's producing our show and went to Syracuse and your team wasn't good enough to get out of the first round, you're rooting for the storyline. You're rooting for the Murray State to make the Sweet 16 and just to see how special this Ja Morant kid really is. You want to see more of him. You don't want the ride to end tonight against Florida State, especially based on what you saw on Thursday against Marquette. Like to know your thoughts on other similar scenarios in past NCAA tournaments, a star player just kind of grabbing control of this NCAA tournament and leading a mid-major on a deep and memorable run. You know, there's been other mid-majors that made runs. Obviously, the George Mason team that went to the Final Four, they didn't have that one star player. Gonzaga, even in their early years when they were a bona fide Cinderella, didn't usually have that one star player. They had Adam Morrison that 1 year, but that wasn't a lovable team. So I'd like to know your thoughts on other examples in the past and what can really make this NCAA tournament memorable.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.
He's out, four down on the baseline, 7 seconds left in the half. Oh, crossover, step back, three-pointer, Morant, got it. And the shot at the buzzer for Marquette is no good. What a clinic put on by Ja Morant. A step back three before halftime and a 7-point lead for Murray State, 42-35. He's got 19. Backdoor cut. Morant. Oh, shoot this to jam. He was kissing the rim as he bangs it home. A gorgeous cut and a thunderous two. It's 51-38.
And those calls courtesy of Westwood One Thursday afternoon in Hartford. Murray State's 83-64 win, a 12 beating of 5 over Marquette in the first round of the NCAA tournament. A tour de force for Ja Morant, the first triple-double in the NCAA tournament in seven years. I forgot what year it was. 2012 was the last time. Draymond Green was the last guy to do it. He did it against the local team, Ty. Do you know what team he did it against? Take a guess. I was actually at the game. It was in Columbus, Ohio in 2012.
I'm going to say, no, I don't know.
LIU Brooklyn.
Wow. It's no longer LIU Brooklyn now, right?
It is. Well, they combined with LIU Post. So I don't know if they go by LIU again or LIU Brooklyn, but they're still in Brooklyn and they still play their home basketball games there. But yeah, that was 2012. Draymond Green, triple-double, Michigan State a 1 against a 16 in LIU Brooklyn. But back to Ja Morant, first one to do that since then. And this is the amazing thing. Again, like I said, you've heard about this guy all season long, okay? You've heard about this kid from Murray State, but you always take it with a grain of salt when it's a guy who you don't see all the time and who's not doing it against a power conference schedule. But his opportunity in the NCAA tournament to do it against the Big East team in Marquette, a top 20 program in Marquette, and to put on that kind of performance, he dominated the game. He single-handedly dominated the game. And I am really, really excited to see if he can follow that up in the second round this afternoon. Now, he's going up against a Florida State team that anybody who knows Florida State knows they are a very, very tough defensive team. So he's going to have his hands full. It's a 6 o'clock game tonight, actually, Murray State and Florida State. 6:10 tip-off on TNT. They're going to have their hands full with Leonard Hamilton. He's been doing this a long time, and he has coached some great defensive teams at Florida State. And it'll be interesting to see the game plan he has in store for Ja Morant. Let me go back to the other two guys I was comparing him to. And I really hope this comes to fruition. I hope we have more than just that one special game for Ja Morant. I really hope this lasts into next weekend. And as I'm saying that, I will add that I actually picked Florida State to go to the Final Four. I'm just speaking from a pure college basketball fan standpoint. After what I saw on Thursday, I want to see more. Let's go back to Stephen Curry in 2008. This is what I'm talking about. This is what Morant has the opportunity to do. Now, bear in mind, different type of player. Stephen Curry, Wally Szczerbiak, more scorers. Morant led the country in assists, averaged 10 assists per game, had 16 assists. Yeah, he can score, but he's not the kind of guy who's going to go out game after game and get 35, 40 points. They can win without him having to do that. The Davidson team of Stephen Curry couldn't. The Miami of Ohio team of Wally Szczerbiak couldn't. Those guys needed to score 30 points for those teams to win. Here's Curry's 2008 NCAA tournament. Davidson was a number 10 seed. In the first round, ironically, they played the original Cinderella in Gonzaga, a 10 versus a 7. Curry scored 40 points. He hit 8 three-pointers, and Davidson beat Gonzaga 82-76. On to round 2. Davidson a 10 against Georgetown, a number 2 seed. Curry, 30 points, 5 for 15 from downtown. Davidson beats Georgetown 74-70. On to the Sweet 16, 3 straight days of how great Stephen Curry is, bursting onto the national stage. And if you can believe it, still some questions about what kind of an NBA player he would be because of his slight frame. Sweet 16, number 10 Davidson against number 3 Wisconsin. Curry, 33 points against the Badgers, 6 for 11 from downtown. And Davidson beats them 73-56. On to the Elite 8 against Kansas. Davidson led this game 51-49. With 7 minutes to go, a shot at the Final Four. It would have been one of the greatest upsets in history. I would put that ahead of George Mason beating UConn to go to the Final Four in 2006. I think it was 2006. Yeah, 2006. Davidson a 2-point lead with minutes to go in that game. Curry scored 25 points against Kansas, finally ran out of steam against a team that would go on to win the national championship. He was 4 for 16 from downtown. Davidson lost 59-57. One of the most incredible runs you'll ever see in the NCAA tournament. Four games, he averaged 32 points a game. He was 44% from downtown. And here's the other thing about these guys. These guys can't come off the floor. They don't have the luxury of taking a four-minute rest in the first half and a four-minute rest in the second half. In the four games, Curry was on the floor for 152 out of 160 possible minutes. How could you take a guy like that off the floor? He was absolutely gassed by the end of that run. And a couple of interesting postscripts to that. As I said, Kansas went on to win the national championship in 2008. They beat Memphis. Curry came back the next year and averaged 28.6 points a game. And still, despite the NCAA tournament run in 2008, despite averaging 28.5 points in 2009, still the following players were picked ahead of him in the 2009 NBA draft. Hashim Thabeet, Tyreke Evans, Ricky Rubio, and Ty, you know this guy.
Johnny Flynn.
Well,
the Wolves.
I know a lot of people have talked about this, but I still think they haven't talked about it enough. The fact that the Timberwolves picked two point guards in that draft.
Ahead of
at
Steph
five
Curry.
And six, and neither one of them were Steph Curry.
Picking two point guards in a draft is, I mean, you're just inept.
Yeah,
that's just ineptitude.
Agreed. That's the first part of it. And then the fact that you picked two and neither
and
one of them.
Neither of them with Steph Curry.
Now, Rubio's had a good career. He's still playing point guard for Utah now. He's had a good career. But we're talking about one of the greatest players, the greatest shooter in the history of the game. And that's one of the great what-ifs for the Knicks. One of the great what-ifs for the Knicks. All reports leading up to that draft. Not everybody was sold on Steph Curry. Donnie Walsh was. Donnie Walsh had him in the holster. He was ready to pick him. But the Knicks picked eighth, the Warriors picked seventh, and they grabbed Steph Curry.
Could Steph Curry have become the player he is today?
That's a good question.
Playing for the Knicks?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that, I will bring in Mark Jackson on that point, because Mark Jackson's a guy who, for whatever reason, hasn't gotten another NBA coaching job. I think Mark Jackson deserves a lot of credit for the development of Steph Curry, of Klay Thompson, when they came into the NBA. I mean, he got that Warriors team that was a lottery team into the playoffs. Now, I stand by, you know, I don't think they would have enjoyed the same amount of success with
Absolutely
Jackson.
Absolutely not.
But I do think as you look back over history, Jackson has a lot to do with getting Steph Curry up and running in his
and
career.
And you can say for Steve Kerr, like, he unlocked the different elements
yeah,
of that team.
Like,
you know,
different
David Lee
sets.
Going to the bench, bringing in Draymond Green and Harrison Barnes to the starting lineup. So he basically took the same team that Mark Jackson had that got bounced in the first round, and then the very next season, Steve Kerr had him with 67 wins and an NBA championship.
Yeah, very next season. Jackson did get, I think it was the year before that, Jackson got them into the second round.
So yeah, past the Clippers.
The Clippers, that was the whole, yes. Yeah, and then the next year, they lost to the Clippers with the Donald Sterling year, I believe.
Absolutely.
And that was Jackson's, the end of his tenure. All right, so that was Curry. Let me do Wally real quick, okay? That was Curry 2008. Wally Szczerbiak, 1999, okay? And I see at least one of our callers up on the board remembers that. Miami of Ohio was a number 10 seed. First of all, they were an at-large. They had a great season, but they lost. It's one of those mid-majors that loses in its conference championship game. So they had to sweat out Selection Sunday, and Miami, Ohio actually had to get into the NCAA tournament as an at-large team that year. So that says something right there. First round, Miami's a 10 seed. They play number 7, Washington. Wally scores 43 points against the Huskies. He was 5 for 12 from downtown, also grabbed 12 rebounds, and Miami beats Washington 59-58. On to round 2 and number 2, Utah. Now, if you remember Utah back then, Rick Majerus was the coach, and the year before, they made it to the national championship game when they lost to Kentucky. So this was a powerhouse Utah program, a second seed. Wally scores 24 against them. He was 2 for 5 from downtown. He grabbed 8 rebounds, and Miami beat Utah 66-58. On to the Sweet 16. Wally Szczerbiak is the darling of the NCAA tournament. And in the Sweet 16, they ran up against Kentucky. They gave him a game for a while. Kentucky was the defending champ. So back-to-back games, Szczerbiak and Miami, Ohio had to play the two teams that had played each other in the previous years. National championship. Wally still scored 23 against Kentucky. He was 4 for 10 from downtown, But Miami, as these mid-majors often do, ran out of gas. They lost 58-43 in the Sweet 16 to Kentucky. But Wally Szczerbiak's three games in 1999 averaged 30 points a game, 7.3 rebounds, 11 for 27 from downtown. That's 41%. And again, the minutes. 120 possible minutes in those three games. Wally was on the floor for 118 of them. These guys don't come off the court anymore. Szczerbiak went on to be the number, he was a senior. He was the number six pick in that draft by Minnesota. Had a very good NBA career, a long NBA career with several different teams. So you had Wally, you had Steph Curry, and now possibly Ja Morant. And again, the minutes, Morant played 39 out of a possible 40 minutes in their first round win over Marquette.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.
Pat O'Keefe sitting in for Dave Rothenberg, 1-800-919-3776. I want to get to the Tom Izzo story from Thursday's game in the first round against Bradley, the confrontation in the huddle with his young player, Aaron Henry. I know it's been a big topic of conversation. I heard Gordon Damer getting a lot of calls on it on my way into the studio this morning. And, you know, a lot of the reaction both on the TV networks and Twitter the last couple of days. I'll just say this, and this is where I come down on this. I didn't see a problem with it. I didn't see a problem with what Tom Izzo did, and I know a lot of people share my opinion, and I know there are a lot of people out there that don't share my opinion. Only I can, the only thing I can do is come from what I know, from a life spent in sports. First playing every sport imaginable growing up through the college level, and having been a quote unquote PIA, for those of you who know what that stands for, at several points during my life, I played every sport you could imagine in high school. I played soccer on the college level. I was not the easiest guy to get along with for a coach. So there were a lot of times where a coach was coming down hard on me. And I'm not saying that's the deal with Aaron Henry, but I am saying that I was in the situation several times that I look back on it and I wasn't doing what I was supposed to do. And I was admonished either verbally, well, always verbally. I was never admonished physically, which is a good thing. And I do think that's where the line is drawn here. I don't think it's a problem. He's a coach. He's paid to coach. That's his method of coaching. He's been a very successful coach doing it his way for a very long time at Michigan State. He's won a national championship. He has been asked to come back year after year after year by the people who run that university. And until they feel otherwise that this is not the method that they want their coach taking to run their basketball program, this is what you get when you sign up for Tom Izzo. And obviously the exchange with Aaron Henry went viral. And here's what Izzo had to say afterwards regarding what happened.
It's funny. I learned in the last couple of years about sound bites. And one word makes a difference, you know. There's a 10-second soundbite in a 2-year relationship. I won't say it was nothing. It was nothing. The 10 seconds, you know, you got to appreciate that there's a year and a half of recruiting. There's a year that he's been there now. There's hours and hours and hours are spent on what do you want to accomplish? What do you need to do to accomplish that? What do you need to do to help our team win? And if you don't do those things, what do you think my job is? A little bit surprised. This day and age, to me, it was ridiculous the way it blew up. I just would publicly thank the many, many people that just saw it as ridiculous how people reacted. But I have nothing to do with anything with me, with Aaron.
All right, here's the thing. I don't think it's ridiculous the way it blew up, and I don't think it's ridiculous the way people reacted. I just think that's the way people react to things like this now. Just like I don't think there's any problem with what Tom Izzo did. Tom Izzo did what Tom Izzo does, and people reacted to this the way people react to things like this. Let's hear what Aaron Henry had to say.
There was no abuse done. There was nothing bad done. It's just coaching. I mean, that's what he is. That's his label. That's his job. He's coaching me. And you can't be sorry for that. You can't be sorry. He wants to help me. You can't be upset at how he does it. Everybody has their method, and his method is just doing it the way he does. So I know what I signed up for. My family did, too, and I'm all for it.
That's his method. If you don't like his method, then go play for someone else. And he's not saying that. This is the counter argument for people who seem to have a problem with what Tom Izzo did here. My take on this is much of the criticism for how Tom Izzo handled this is generated by people who haven't ever found themselves in a situation like that and are just looking at it from the outside. And do I think that this is part of a larger aspect of our society in which we are getting softer? Yes. Yes, I do. 1-800-919-3776. Omar has been waiting to call in from Brooklyn. What's up, Omar?
Hi, good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning.
I want to evaporate a lot of people listen to me. I think the best scenario, as I'm a Knicks fan, so I will tell you, I'm very close on Zion and Morant. And like you, I don't watch NCAA basketball at all. I'm not a college basketball fan. But I watch Thursday evening just for Morant. And I watched the whole game. I have seen his highlights. I just watched the whole game. And up to now, it has stuck into me that I want to watch it tonight, 6:10, that I want to see how much impact this player, like LeBron, does on a player, the way he controls the game. He didn't score no 40 points. 17 rebounds, a triple-double we have seen in NBA. It's a common factor today. But the way he controls the game, and Jamed, I just stick into my mind that this player is going to play for New York Knicks for next 10 years. So I want to see, with a good defensive team Florida is, as everybody says it is, right? So how he's going to perform. And I'm going to elaborate my decision after watching the whole NCAA. Where, to Zion Lewis, my category is Zion has to win. Duke has to win an NBA championship because they have talent and they are big punchers. The way Carmelo Anthony won the championship. For this kid to go into the second round, win this today's game, and make a run, I will elaborate how he can impact and Zion can impact for number one pick overall as a Knicks fan. For me, as a Knicks fan, I will say that Julius Randle, Magic Johnson, and Doug Dunn, our worst nightmare job that everybody can expose. Russell and Julius Randle, the two kids that are emerging superstars, he has let it go without anything, basically.
Omar, I appreciate your passion, and you're right on. Let me say this, and thanks for the call. I don't think the Knicks are going to have to make a choice between Zion Williamson and Ja Morant. Let's say the Knicks get the number one or the number two pick. If they get the number one pick, it's not a choice. Zion Williamson is the choice at number one. If the Knicks happen to fall to number two, which is very likely, or below, then the choice is made for them because Zion Williamson won't be available. I think, especially after Thursday night, and everybody, and it's one game, but everybody's seeing the full scope of what Ja Morant is and seeing for themselves what they've been hearing about this guy all season long, that he is the real deal. I think if the Knicks walk away from the NBA draft with Ja Morant, even though Zion Williamson is the prize, I think if the Knicks walk away from the NBA draft with Ja Morant, I think they're going to be okay.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.
Let's go back to the phones. Edwin calling in from Long Island. What's up, Edwin?
Hey, Pat. How are you? I'm a huge fan.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Sometimes when Andrew leaves me on hold from the Michael Kay Show, I tune into you post the pre and post game, and your work is amazing.
Thank you, Edwin. That's nice of you to say.
No problem. As far as the Knicks go, I know there are a couple of needs. One being Zion Williamson. If we do get the first pick, that would be great. He could fill a small forward position because we haven't had a dominant small forward in that position since Carmelo Anthony. And as far as I would take number two if we get picked, if we hit the lottery at number two, it would be Ja Morant. We need a point guard. We haven't had a point guard that put up decent numbers since, you know, God knows how long.
It's been a long time, Edwin.
Yeah. And number three, if we get the third pick, I would definitely go with R.J. Barrett. I feel like he's going to be the rookie of the year. We love players. Alan Hahn says it all the time, that play with a chip on their shoulder. And then he also would be replacing a Tim Hardaway shooting guard position. So those are my one, two, and threes. I'll leave it up to you to debate four, five, and six.
Well, Edwin, it doesn't look like they have to worry about six. They're going to have the worst record in the NBA, which means the worst they can do is the fifth pick, and I don't think any Knicks fans right now, Edwin, yourself included, want to even think about this team picking four or five. Isn't that right?
That is right. That is correct. And I'll hang up and listen because I know you're running against the clock. Pat, as far as the second round, keep an eye on C.J. Massenburg. Buffalo just moved on. They beat Arizona State. So keep an eye on the second round on C.J. Massenburg. Thanks, Pat. I'll be tuning into you this week, bud.
A sleeper pick. Tomorrow at 11:30 is the pregame show, Edwin. Knicks Clippers. Thanks a lot. I think that's it. That's the consensus. First three picks of the NBA draft. It's Zion, it's Ja Morant, and it's RJ Barrett. I had a conversation about a month ago with an NBA guy about the Knicks positioning in the draft. And he said at the time that I think if the Knicks can sign for either, obviously you'd sign for Williamson. That's the ultimate prize. But even if you could sign for Barrett at the time, you would do that at the time. I think Barrett actually is going to be a very good NBA player. He seems to project as one of those guys who's going to be better on the NBA level than he was in college. Kind of like a Grant Hill, you know, there's been similar examples of guys like that throughout the years. After what I saw on Thursday up close watching the full game, just watching what Ja Morant is all about, I think you extend that. I think if you're the Knicks and you come away with Zion Williamson, Ja Morant or RJ Barrett, I think you're happy. I do. Where it gets a little dicey is if you happen to fall out of those top three. And look, there's nothing they can do about it. It's a lottery. It's that by definition, it's a crapshoot. So we'll see what happens in May in Chicago, May 14th, I think. That is going to be, I'm not going to say everything for the Knicks because they're still free agency. They're still their young players and they're still their future assets. This franchise needs a little bit of luck. I know there's a lot that do, but when you consider the Knicks won the first lottery in 1985 and they picked Patrick Ewing and that turned out very well. Ever since then, the Knicks have not only not won the lottery, they've never moved up from their projected spot. Now this year, they're not going to be able to move up from their projected spot because their projected spot is going to be number one. But we'll see what happens. 1-800-919-3776. Let's go to Scott in Norwalk. What's up, Scott?
How you doing, Bob Ross? Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
I'm actually in shock that everyone is defending Tom Izzo so adamantly. It's just unacceptable verbal abuse. It's unprofessional. It's disrespectful. It's bullying. And it seems to me like Michigan State has a culture of abuse, whether it's the gymnastics doctor or now everyone defending Izzo.
I don't know. Well, first of all, I think most of the people defending Izzo don't have anything to do with Michigan State, myself included. I don't think this has anything to do with the Larry Nassar case, which was a completely different thing. Let me ask you. I mean, you obviously have a problem with what Tom Izzo did. You're in that situation. You're the head coach of Michigan State in that game. How would you have handled the situation with the kid?
What I'm saying is that it seems like sports is the last place this kind of behavior is acceptable. It's like the young lady who answered the phone. If you wanted a coffee or a soda during the break, are you going to scream at her if she doesn't get it back quick enough?
Like, no, I. But I.
Sports radio. I need my Coke. I need my coffee.
Hey, I would never talk to Michelle like that. She talks to me like that. Actually, she just talked to me like that during the commercial break. You should have seen me running to get her a cup of coffee. Now, seriously, Scott, I made this point earlier. What I do is not in a charged atmosphere with 18,000 people watching. Okay, it's not this high stakes, winner take all athletic competition that Michigan State is involved in. It's completely different. You can't compare Tom Izzo's job and his profession to what I do or what you do or what Michelle or Ty, our producer, does or anybody like that. It's completely different.
I think we can because you have
the
Tony Dunsies of the world and the Joe Torres of the world, and then you have the Vince Lombardis and the Billy Martins. It's like.
And they were all successful.
They need to wake up. No.
So I'm sorry. So are you? Just so I'm clear, are you using Vince Lombardi as an example of how not to coach?
I'm using Vince Lombardi as somebody who coached 50 years ago, and that society has progressed, and that Billy Martin is my favorite of all time. So Joe Torre got more results than Billy Martin. So
well, Joe Torre had a better team than Billy Martin. I think Joe Torre had a much better team than Billy Martin. All right, Scott, thanks for the call. 1-800-919-3776. Where does it stop? Where's the line? All right, 20 years ago, Bob Knight was a wild man, and He'd grab his players' arms, he'd throw chairs, and he continued to coach. That is not tolerable today. Nobody does that today. We have progressed. That's not acceptable anymore, okay? We've moved to the point where you can't put your hands on anybody. And if you look back in hindsight, that probably should have always been the case, but it wasn't. But it's the case now, no question about it. You can't put your hands on anybody. Tom Izzo, fortunately for him, didn't put his hands on anybody in this situation. So where's the line now? This is what I want to know. The line keeps moving on us. In some ways, it's good. I think it's good that the line moved past the point where you can put your hand on a player or you could throw a chair across the court. But what our last caller is saying is now the line has moved to the point where you can't yell at a player? I don't understand. You have to ask permission of the player to discuss what just happened out there. You got 30 seconds in the huddle, and you're in the middle of a game. You've got to draw up your next play, and you've got to settle your team down. And so the line moves, and now you can't yell at players anymore. Or is it just the finger wagging in the face that you can't do anymore? You can yell, but you can't wag the finger. And the word abuse, I mean, especially in our society today, there's a lot of crap going on out there with actual abuse. That word shouldn't be thrown around so liberally right here. Yelling at a player on national television who wasn't doing his job in a basketball game, probably the same way that he's been yelled at a dozen times in practice, and I shouldn't say probably, because Aaron Henry said that he's been spoken to like that before. He keeps coming back. He's on the team. That's how Tom Izzo coaches. So where's the line? Where's the line going to be in 10 years? We come in here to do this show in 10 years. Where's the line going to be then? What coach went over the line then? I don't know. Andre in Tuckahoe. What's up, Andre?
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning.
So, I have no problem with Tom Izzo, you know, yelling at the players or, you know, getting in the face. But it would have been interesting to see. He was so hot that he had to be restrained twice. It would have been interesting to see what the outcome would have been. He probably could have cooled down, you know, put his arm around his shoulder, talked to him. Or he could have, like, poked him in his chest or, you know, anything. So we don't know. We just know that he was yelling at the guy. He was hot. But we don't know the end game because he was restrained back. So it would have been interesting to see what happened afterwards.
It would have. But here's what I say about that. I think Tom Izzo knows his limitations. I think he went right up to the line where he was comfortable going and where the kid would have been comfortable going. I think there was a complete method to his quote-unquote madness in this situation. I think he knew exactly what he was doing. And you can communicate with different players different ways. I'm sure there are players on Michigan State's roster that would not have received that type of feedback or that type of criticism the same way. And knowing Izzo's career and how successful he's been, I don't think he approaches every single player on his roster the same way. I think he knew he could do it with this kid. And everything Aaron Henry has said since and everything he did in the game afterwards proved that Tom Izzo was pushing the right buttons and knew what he was doing in this situation.
No, I think you're right. I think he would have cooled down and, you know, through a restraint, he probably would have, you know, cooled down and settled things down. But the fact that he didn't get a chance to, people are making a big issue about it now, you know?
People like to make a big issue about things. Andre, thanks for the call. 1-800-919-3776. Up next, Christian in Maine. What's up, Christian?
Hey, what's going on?
How you doing?
Great show.
Thank you.
Not bad. I wanted to address an earlier caller who had a real problem with the Knicks drafting 4 or 5. I actually think that's best case scenario because it forces us to take a guy like Cam Reddish. Because Zion and specifically RJ Barrett really worry me. I don't think his game translates to the NBA today. He's more of like an ISO Carmelo player.
This is Zion you're talking about?
No, specifically Barrett.
Barrett, okay.
I'd still take Zion 1, but I would take Cam Reddish at 2. He's like a young Tyreek Evans. He's like a slasher. He gets the hoop. If he gets a knockdown 3, I don't think how anyone can – his game translates the best to today, I think.
I'll say this, Christian. The Knicks are 14-59. They're about a week and a half away from completing the worst season in franchise history, 4 years after they completed the worst season in franchise history. If they come out of this whole season and they get a guy who projects to be the next Tyreek Evans, I think that's a huge disappointment. Evans is a nice player. This is an historically bad season, and the Knicks want Zion Williamson or they want a guy like Ja Morant. I don't think they want the next Tyreek Evans.
You don't think John Morant, because I think the plan is to keep Dennis Smith Jr., so I just don't know where Ja fits into there.
Mike Tyson said that everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth. John Morant punched a bunch of people in the mouth on Thursday with his performance against Marquette. Thanks for the call, Christian from Maine. John Morant punched a lot of people from the mouth. I think the Knicks like Dennis Smith Jr. He's been hurt the last five games, so they haven't seen him out on the court. I do think the Knicks like Dennis Smith Jr. They think there could be a future there, but if they find a potential better future, if they're on the clock at number two and John Morant's their best player on the board, I don't care how much they like Dennis Smith Jr., if they like John Morant better, they're picking John Morant.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.